This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
Good evening, and thank you for tuning in to Eco Radio. On tonight's program, we welcome Monsignor Stuart Sweatland, the president of Donnelly College in Kansas City, Kansas. He will be giving us a summary of the Pope's encyclical on climate change, along with what it is he wants to accomplish environmentally at Donnelly in the coming years. But first, I'm naturally with your environmental news. Inhabitant.com reports, the GOP-dominated House passed a bill that effectively prevents scientists who are peer-reviewed experts in their field from providing advice, directly or indirectly, to the EPA, while at the same time allowing industry representatives with financial interests in fossil fuels to have their say. Bill H.R. 1422, also known as the Science Advisory Board Reform Act, passed 229 to 191. It was sponsored by Representative Chris Stewart, a Republican at Utah. The bill changes the rules for appointing members to the Science Advisory Board, which provides scientific advice to the EPA administrator. This means that a scientist who had published a peer-reviewed paper on a particular topic would not be able to advise the EPA on the findings contained within that paper. That is, the scientists who know the subject matter best would not be able to discuss it. STLtoday.com reports, Franklin County leaders have approved zoning code changes that may derail environmental lawsuits that seek to block a coal ash landfill proposed by Ameren, Missouri. Patricia Shuba, head of the Labadee Environmental Organization, said the Franklin County Commission approved the changes Tuesday morning. Quote, it was clear that the Franklin County attorney was suggesting these changes to stop litigation, end quote, she said. The utility still must comply with a January permit from the Missouri Department of Natural Resources. The DNR incorporated new requirements from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, such as a larger buffer between groundwater and the landfill's base. It also requires monitoring for contamination. The Labadee Group argues that the landfill shouldn't be built in the floodplain of a river that provides drinking water to many in the St. Louis area. Ameren says it will build a berm to protect against a 500-year flood and that the location will save millions of dollars while keeping trucks hauling coal ash off area roads. KansasCity.com reports, a new report from E2, Environmental Entrepreneurs, and MEI, the Missouri Energy Initiative, shows that nearly 40,000 people and more than 4,400 establishments in the state are employed in green sectors of the economy. Quote, this number is roughly double Iowa's clean energy and transportation workforce, but less than half the workers in Illinois and Massachusetts, suggesting room for growth, end quote, the report says. Missouri's green industry includes renewable energy, energy efficiency, advanced transportation, and greenhouse gas emissions management and accounting. The energy efficiency sector has 32,576 clean energy workers. That's 83% of all clean energy jobs in the state, the report notes. Renewable energy companies account for 15% of clean energy employment, or 6,050 workers. 3,715 of them are solar employees. Missouri's clean energy economy enjoyed a 4.8% employment growth, creating 2,000 new jobs from 2013 to 2014. MaconTheNews.com reports, a dedication ceremony was held on Wednesday, July 1st for the Macon Solar Farm. The farm has 10,800 solar panels on site, which will produce around 4 million kilowatt hours every year. It is as large as 4 football fields containing 12.6 acres of fenced-in land. It is monitored remotely, and anyone can go online to view pictures of the site and to see production levels. The solar panels that are installed at the site are thicker, more effective, and cost-efficient than their predecessors. Due to this, the cost of solar energy is now competitive with coal. DemocracyNow.org reports, in London, environmental activists chained themselves together on the runway at Heathrow Airport to protest plans to build a third runway. The protesters cut through a fence and locked down on the northern runway, promoting a number of flight cancellations. They are from a group called Plane Stupid, which seeks to highlight the role of the airline industry in climate change. And finally, about 25 people gathered yesterday at our Union Station to protest oil trains coming through Kansas City. Now, Mike Murphy will report more about this event.
Yeah, thank you, Naturally. In this, spite of the sweltering heat, 25 people gathered yesterday, some coming from as far as Nebraska to protest against the oil trains, not just coming through Kansas City and Parkville and Olathe and surrounding areas, but throughout the country, and increase in accidents have risen dramatically in the past few years. So we're going to hear from John Kerman as he spoke to the faithful who came out in the heat, and we'll hear a couple of spots and then turn it right over to Mr. Mabian.
Probably don't need to tell all of you why we're out here, but I'll go ahead and give you the quick overview since we're in the blistering heat. We got a problem in this country. Hundreds of thousands of tank cars of highly explosive cracked oil, primarily, plus diluted bitumen from the tar sands in Canada, being shipped through populated areas all over North America. Small towns, big cities, including Kansas City. Now, why is this a problem?
Because they blow up. They blow up!
Well, sure, they blow up. But why is it suddenly a problem? You know, 5 years ago, you didn't hear anything about...
Because there's more of them now.
You didn't hear anything about explosions from oil trains. Why is that? That's because hardly any oil was being shipped 5 years ago. In 2008, only 9,500 tank car loads of oil were shipped in the U.S. The last figure I saw was from 2013, when it was about 400,000. There's the fundamental problem. There's been a huge increase in production from the oil fields in North Dakota, where they're fracking the oil to get it out of the ground, and essentially no pipeline infrastructure to get it to market. The industry would much prefer to use pipelines to get it to market, but they don't have that. So, they have pressed into service a whole lot of these tank cars that were never designed to carry a material that is highly explosive, highly volatile.
We should ban fracking.
Yeah, that's a different rally. So these cars, having never been intended to carry highly explosive, highly volatile material, are puncture prone. And they keep puncturing. And when they puncture, all you need is a few sparks and you get an explosion and you get a terrible fire. I'm holding a photo of the worst and the first one that really got big attention, which was why we're doing this time of year despite the heat. July 6, 2013. I cannot say this because I'm not French. Lac Mégantic, Quebec, Canada. An oil train that was unattended, something failed with the brakes, rolled into the heart of that town, derailed, exploded, essentially destroyed downtown Lac Mégantic. Killed 47 people, destroyed 44 buildings. I think it's billions of dollars worth of damage to this town. Since then, there have been regular oil train derailments, and most of them that have derailed have caught on fire, exploded. We've already had 5 so far this year. Everybody who's holding one of the signs with a photograph, hold it up. We have Timmins, Ontario, February 15th of this year. We have Galena, Illinois, March 5th of this year. Gogama, Ontario, March 7th of this year. Mount Carbon, West Virginia, February 16th of this year. One more somewhere, isn't there? Ah, yes. And the most recent, Heimdall, North Dakota, on May 6th of this year. Now, we've been fortunate that those accidents, I call them inevitables given these trains and the condition of our rail network, all happened in more remote areas than the Lac Mégantic explosion. But still, people had to be evacuated. Lots of devastation occurred. The air pollution, the water pollution from the burning trains, the spilled oil that didn't catch on fire. So this is a big problem. Now, you may have heard that the Obama administration released new oil train regulations on May 1st. Hey, great news, right? Except those oil train regulations will leave the most dangerous rail cars on the rails for up to 5 years. They'll leave the second most dangerous kind, which is also getting involved in explosions, for up to 10 years. These regulations are effectively a permit for business as usual to continue. Because if the industry has its way, it will build pipelines before they ever have to phase these rail cars out. That's what they intend to do. Now, of course, we're fighting those pipelines too. And we hope to defeat them too. But these trains should be stopped now. This fracked oil and this diluted bitumen should not be shipped in any tank car that was not engineered, designed to carry this kind of flammable explosive cargo, period. An immediate ban on this should be implemented. Now, of course, the industry will say, but we're producing all this oil, we have to get it to market. There's a glut of oil supply around the world right now, which is why oil prices plummeted over the last year. So we can live without it. Oil prices would go up, but we can live without it. They're not banning these trains because the oil industry and the railroad industry, both of which are fighting tooth and nail to block real regulations, are making tons of money off of this stuff. And the regulatory agencies are beholden to the industry before they're beholden to public safety, to our lives. So we got these things running through Kansas City, right through downtown Parkville, right north of Union Station here, down the I-35 corridor, through Miriam, Lenexa, Shawnee, Olathe, right through downtown Kansas City these things are running. Now, we don't know that a disaster is going to happen here in our backyard, but the message today is not in our backyard, not in anybody's backyard. Nobody should be put at risk by these trains carrying oil in cars that were never intended to carry it. So that's all I'm going to say today. If you're not already on 350KC's email list, make sure you sign up on the sign-up sheet there.
Supporting 90.1 FM, prizes, performances, productions, and more. The largest Latino event of the summer is coming to the Kansas City Convention Center. The National Council of La Raza's National Latino Family Expo will provide interactive demonstrations, entertainment, and will provide health screenings for the whole family. This happens from July 11th to the 13th at the Kansas City Convention Center. For all information, 913-353-6257 or at nclr.org/events.
This week, the founder of Skeptic Magazine asks a big question. What's the driving force behind the morals and rights we cherish today? Reason or religion?
That secular idea that rights exist and the enforcement of it through law is what has changed.
I'm Maureen Fiedler. That's next time on Interfaith Voices.
Tuesday at noon, right after your Fusion Funkmeister.
Good evening, everyone. This is Richard Mabian, and I'm hosting the Eco Radio show tonight. And we have, as usual, a fantastic show for you. Before I get started, I have to say something about my experience. Well, two experiences. I was in D.C. last week, Thursday and Friday, with all the top cops. I like to say that. I was with the top cops from all around the nation. And each one of those top cops, I think I might have told y'all something about this last Monday, was asked to bring some vocal a neighborhood leader with them, a community leader. And I got a chance to go with the police chief from Kansas City, Kansas. Quite an experience sitting in that room with all these people from around the nation. Got a chance to bond with Martin Luther King's daughter, Bernice King. I was really, really sharp. She might do something here in Kansas City with us, so I'm really excited about that. And got a chance to see police chiefs from pretty much all your major cities were there, and it was kind of an interesting experience. I will say this. The one time they did let me speak, And they didn't let me speak anymore because I immediately took them to the task that the meeting had more black people in it than I'd ever been in my life and all my work that I'm doing. And the reason for that, because when I made my introduction, I did it as the president of the NAACP and also as the first black board member for the Sierra Club in the state of Kansas. And I told him the reason I told him that said made that kind of introduction is because no one in that room had anything to do or say about the environment. And as far as I'm concerned, that's the most important thing going on with our young people in the future. And if, in fact, we don't find ourselves in a position that we're finding some way to educate our youth, our future generations, and science and all of the different technologies and stuff, that we're doing a disservice to our city. You can talk to me about your crime and the people dying and all people going to jail. But if we don't do something to educate our future generations, and as far as the STEM education programs are concerned, our kids won't get a job. And I think that's stuck. That's why they didn't let me talk no more, because I was being real pointed about that. But I did. That's where I bonded with Bernice King. So we did make that establishment. Then when I came back here, I had been invited, again, as the NAACP president, to attend this National Council of La Raza. In fact, that ad, that commercial just went off, talked about it being down there from the 11th through the 13th. And I just want to say, it's probably been one of the most fantastic experiences I've had in my life. To see what our Hispanic brothers and sisters are doing around this country with each other for this country, their patriotism, oh, God. You just get caught up in it. It's a moving experience. If you ever have a chance to go to something like that, by all means, go. I guarantee you, you won't regret it. It's definitely a one moving experience. On Saturday, we had all of our dignitary was there, the mayor from Kansas City, Kansas, mayor from Kansas City, Missouri. We had the governor was there, and they all performed real well. I think you'd have been proud of them. I was. I thought they did a very good job of representing this city. And now today, and I'll get off of this, they had a lineup that should make all of you out there just as jealous as you can be. It started out this morning at around 10 o'clock with Bernie Sanders, followed up by Martin O'Malley for the lunch, and then Julius Castro, who's, you know, is the Secretary of HUD, followed up by a guy I had never heard of before that's a Latino, that's a senior executive vice president with Sprint, last name Claus or something like that. And then the final person who we just got through listening to here in about the last hour was Hillary Clinton. Now, that's a lineup, folks. This has been quite a day. And the guest that I have here with me tonight, he was also involved with this. I saw him all weekend down there, too. So, in fact, when we got out, I thought it was earlier than it was and realized it was time to come here. When I pulled in the parking lot, he was sitting out there, too. So this is where we're going. Well, first, I'm going to have the Monsignor introduce himself to you and say hello.
It's good to be with you. I'm Monsignor Stuart Swetland from Donnelly College.
Okay, now this is where we're going with this, because this is really the Monsignor's show, especially this first part. I got an email from him telling me that this summer Pope Francis would be issuing a major statement on our responsibilities as stewards of creation. And, you know, and that's got me started realizing this was going on, and I started preparing myself for it and looking at it and waiting to see what he was going to say, excited that it was coming from him. He's making such an impact around the nation that I felt like as an environmentalist, this couldn't hurt. This could not hurt our efforts to have him doing it. But it wasn't until he released it and naturally had the audacity to be able to pronounce that word, and I'm not going to let her be able to do that, and I can't do it, so I got it down here like phonics. Encyclica. If you hadn't done it, I probably wouldn't have got it that well. But I saw this book, and it was a nun, and she had this book in her hand, and I was, oh, there's no way in the world people are going to be reading that book. So I got in touch with the Monsignor and asked him if he would come on the air and explain to us, now, the encyclica is just new, but basically a summary of what this was about. So I'll let you have it.
Well, it's an honor to be here, Richard, and I'm glad. I'm very happy. This is a major statement of the Catholic Church at the highest level, the Bishop of Rome, which is the source of unity for our church. And Pope Francis has put out an encyclical which he called Laudate Si, coming from St. Francis's Canticle of Creation. And it's a major teaching, as high as we can get outside of an ecumenical council. That only happens about once every decade, a social encyclical. The Pope puts out an encyclical about once every 2 years, a major teaching. But a social encyclical he puts out only about once a decade. And this encyclical ties wonderfully our commitment to environmental justice to the rest of the social teaching when it comes to our commitment to helping the poor and the marginalized. So Pope Francis has tried to, taking the line from St. Francis's canticle, praise be to you, my Lord. But that, of course, goes on to praise the Lord through what St. Francis calls our sister, Mother Earth. And to see, as the Pope says, that this sister now cries out to us because of the harm we have inflicted on her by our irresponsible use and abuse of the goods which God has endowed her with. So the Pope is being very straightforward that we as a church and all people of goodwill, because this letter is addressed to all people of goodwill, all men and women of goodwill, we have to do something to address the environmental crisis that we are facing. He says that the world is sick and creation groans and is in agony awaiting our response. And of course, that's an allusion to Romans chapter 8. In this encyclical, he addresses many issues. The intimate relationship between the poor and the fragility of the earth, because it's the poor who suffer most when the earth suffers, the poor areas of our cities and world that are most impacted by environmental problems. The conviction that everything in the world is connected. You know, we now know that the entirety of our ecosystem is connected, but the whole world now, because of the internet and because of social means of communications, we're connected in a way we've never been before. But that means what one person does in one part of the world does have worldwide effects. He also critiques the pluses and minuses that come from new technology. But in particular, he wants to call people to an ecological conversion, to recognize our responsibility to value creation properly. Creation isn't just for our use, it's for our care. And as stewards, we have to recognize that creation has its own value and its own purpose and its own meaning, and it's tending towards its own end. We're part of creation, but we can't just use it any way we want. We must use it in the way it was intended to be used. And this particularly we should do with a mindset that takes care of those on the margins of society.
Okay.
That's not a little bit, huh?
No, you said a lot. You said a lot here now. The world is sick. Address that.
Right. And the haunting question that I found, it's in paragraph 160 of the document. He asked us, what kind of world do we want to leave to those who come after us, to children who are now growing up? And he has no trouble saying, look at the mess we've made. And this is particularly seen in areas of poverty, like the areas he just visited in Ecuador and Paraguay and Bolivia. He talks about the deforestation taking place in what he calls the two lungs of the earth, the Congo region and the Amazon region. And he says that we're not only damaging those regions, perhaps beyond repair, but in taking away the breathing capacity of the earth, we're exacerbating some of the other problems that we're facing. Of course, he embraces the fact that man has contributed, especially through the increase of CO2 in our atmosphere, to the acidification of the waterways, the death of coral reefs throughout a large portion of the world, the loss of biodiversity, and exponential growth, and the loss of species in our world. And so, you know, this is something he knows firsthand as being a man from Latin America and knowing well what has happened in the Amazon basin, but also something he knows because as the head of the church, he has the best diplomatic corps in the world in every country and every land, giving him firsthand reports of what the environmental impact is throughout the world to our choices and our activity.
Okay, gang, I'm going to open this phone up, because I need your help here now in gaining some understanding of what's being talked about. So the number is 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534. Okay, I know that this just didn't come overnight. Okay, and you just said he has a multitude of folks who are feeding him the information of stuff that's going on. So how long, I mean, what has been happening like behind the scenes?
Well, the drafting of this particular document, my sources tell me, started almost as soon as he became Pope. So it's been going on for years. But he's following upon some very important work that was done by his predecessors in this area, though it didn't get much publicity here in the United States. John Paul II, who we now consider a saint, St. John Paul II wrote a very powerful statement in 1990 challenging the pro-life movement, which is strong in the Catholic Church, to recognize that you can't be pro-life if you're not pro the ecology, because they're tied together intimately. And then Benedict XVI, his successor, he made the Vatican City State the first carbon neutral state in the world. He put solar powers on top of solar panels on top of most of the Vatican buildings. He buys he bought carbon offsets every time he used a plane or an automobile to travel. Shepherd One, as they call the Pope's plane.
Right.
He made a commitment to make the entirety of the Vatican operations carbon neutral. That's why they said he was the first green Pope. But Francis has brought all of that work and said, now we're going to do it for all the world and challenge the world to look at our lifestyles, especially the first world, because we use so much disproportionately amount of the world's resources. He says we have a throwaway culture and a lifestyle that is unsustainable morally and ecologically.
Boy, we got a call. Caller, you're on the line. You're on the air. Give me your first name and the part of the city you're calling from, please.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air. Give me your...
Okay, my name is Sheila, and I live in Independence, I live about two blocks from where those trains, where the trains go by with all the tank cars and all that stuff.
Uh-huh.
And I am just very perplexed that, I mean, beyond perplexed, but... the fact that we are tearing up this planet that we live on for a few people to make outrageous amounts of profit off. Hello?
Yeah, you there. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm getting a dial tone on my end.
Okay, we hear you, ma'am.
Go ahead.
Okay. This system, as the Pope says, is going to collapse in on itself. There is a law in physics called the law of diminishing returns.
Okay.
And you go so far, and Donald Koch is a psychopath. When he was asked how much was enough, his reply was, "I want it all."
Okay. Now I gotta hold you up. So
that's megalomaniac.
Okay, I got to hold you to just a question because I got other calls coming in, and let us answer.
Okay, and I also want to emphasize that we are humans. We are just not mankind, and I really would like to be included when you say man must, because that leaves women out, because women are not men, other than the fact that we are a product of a male and a female.
Yes, ma'am.
But please recognize us.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
We'll do. Okay, I got another caller on the line, so I'm going to get both of these in, and then we'll talk about it, okay? Caller, you're on the line.
Well, let's take our break.
We're going to take a break first, so hang on, caller, just a second.
Okay. The Watts Rebellion at 50.
And so what we did was got an ambulance patrol to go pick up the injured people, but we couldn't do this because the law enforcement agencies there were shooting, and we had to get out of the area, and there's a lot of our personnel that is missing. And so what we want to do now is set up a first aid station here. People are burning stores, people, little kids are falling down in the glass and the debris and stuff, and it's really horrible.
On From the Vault, Wednesday morning at 5.
Did you know that you can donate that unwanted car, boat, truck, motorcycle to KKFI Radio and get a tax deduction for your donation? Find out more by calling KKFI at 816-931-3122. This is Joe Martin from Kansas City, a volunteer for 90.1 FM KKFI, my community radio station.
California residents' efforts to conserve water provide inspiration for all on this current cast. Many areas of California and the American Southwest are in the midst of one of the worst droughts in recent history. The lengths they've gone to conserve water are important lessons for everyone facing a water shortage. Heather Cooley, director of the water program at the Pacific Institute, a nonprofit research group, says community efforts to recycle stormwater or recharge groundwater are important, but individual efforts to use water more efficiently at home can make a difference too.
We can be getting rid of our old water wasting appliances, our old toilets, those old inefficient shower heads, and dramatically reduce our water use.
As California residents can attest, when it comes to saving water, every drop counts. Support for Current Cast comes from the Mitsubishi Corporation Foundation for the Americas. Learn more online at currentcast.org.
Okay, those of you who were around last week, remember we had to deal with those coming in, those alerts, so they may happen. Be prepared. All right, we have one more caller on the line. Sheila, we'll be right back with you. Don't think we forgot you. No, I'm letting her know that we'll be back to answer her question. Okay, caller, you're on the line. Will you give me your first name and what part of the city you're calling from, please?
Hello, my name is Marco Rodriguez. I'm in Kansas City's East Side, born and raised here since 1967.
Okay.
First and foremost, I want to say I enjoy your show. Beautiful music you play. You got a great format.
Thank you, sir.
Now on to the topic of the pontiff and his glorification and his establishment being into this new century that we're dealing with. I absolutely have to agree. He has eyes on only of what's going on down there. What is hurting the earth? We depend on this oxygen and all this greenery for, you know, supplemental to this planet. And the reason that a lot of these seasonal things are changing, a lot of people don't take intact that the Earth's magnetic poles have shifted. You now got California baking straight on by radiant heat by solar flares from the sun. Hawaii, all these natural storms are just happening unnaturally because we haven't been used to seeing this type of change. We're in a new era.
Okay.
If we don't do something as a whole, manufacturers, bureaucrats, etc., lower these prices. You want us to switch to all this energy efficiency stuff, but yet you want us to pay for it and wait for a payout to happen to reimburse our money that we spent to get the product.
Okay. All right, Marco, and let me have it from here. I got you. I think you fed into it. And I want to make sure we have enough time to answer something just in case someone else is calling in. I really appreciate it. So we'll answer you offline, okay? Really appreciate you. And keep listening, buddy. I'm glad to know that you're out there listening to us.
Oh, I got you. 90.1 KKFI every afternoon on my way home.
Thank you, sir. All right, gang. Monsignor, we got a couple of people on.
Right. Well, Sheila and Marco make good points. You know, Sheila's right that there is a limit. And this is one of the things that's difficult. For us in America. I joke that one of the American attitudes, I say it all the time to my staff, they're tired of hearing it. I don't want much, I just want more.
Right.
You know, and it's that attitude that the Holy Father is addressing. This when he calls for a change of lifestyles, he's saying that especially the rich North, basically the North, though there's some rich countries in the South, we have disproportionately used the earth. So we have a disproportionate burden in solving this problem, and that there's no way that we can address it if we don't address our lifestyles. Now, some of the things he says are pretty simple, like we need to turn the thermostat up in the summer and turn it down in the winter. And right. If it means wearing a little less clothes in the summer and a little bit more in the winter, that's okay. But we're not ever going to address this crisis, as he calls it, rightfully so, unless we address our lifestyles. We can't sustain that. And Marco's right that it's we can't wait for the market to solve this problem, because the market has contributed to this problem because we've put things into the marketplace that shouldn't be. The one I love to use with my students is individually wrapped cheeses. Okay. If you ever look at how much waste goes into the individual, yeah, it's more convenient. I'll admit, when I'm making a picnic lunch, it's an easier thing to do. But I'll tell you what, the cheese isn't as good. It's not as natural. And it's really hard in the environment to put all that plastic just to get a little cheese to your sandwich. Those are the kinds of things we've done out of convenience that are really, if you pile up millions and billions of choices that are environmentally unsound, it starts to have a real impact on the real environment, and real people are really hurt.
Okay, now here we go with a couple of things here I want to hit on. One has to do...
Make sure we address Sheila's question about the humankind.
Yes, sometimes when I quote a papal document, I have to quote it directly, and the papal documents are translated from the original language and sometimes use mankind. I try in my own teaching to use humankind.
Right.
And use man and woman. So sometimes Europe is a little behind us in
that. And Sheila, you're on the one with what you're saying, and I'll give this country credit. I just told you I came from that La Raza thing, and Hillary was here today, and she spoke a lot about that, the female's position in life and the whole bit, how that's going to be an issue, regardless of how you feel about her. It's not necessary that you have to be a Hillary fan. The fact that she's a female and engaged in this political conversation, she's going to make that an issue.
Richard, I was impressed. A new fact I learned today was particularly this is felt by minority women, as you know, she quoted the number that the average woman, Latina woman, makes 57 cents on the dollar compared to the average man, and that of course is even worse than it is for the majority white population in our country.
I don't know if another signal's coming in or not. We'll see. Yeah.
Yeah, we've got another one coming in. So
this is for your benefit, so we will listen to it.
This is a different one.
Okay. You heard the warning. Take your portable radios downstairs so you can continue to listen to us. I don't want to be talking to dead air. So it looks like we have someone calling in, so let me check that first and see if that is. If it is, then we'll go from there. I was getting ready to mention the fact that a lot of what we're talking about, is that someone? Okay, someone, Sheila again?
Yes.
Okay, Sheila, you're back on the line, but keep it short because I'm running on my time now, okay?
Okay.
Okay, you got the question?
Oh, well, actually, I was prompted to call because when I hear the warning, the dire warning about our environment, our planet, our way of life, our even being life here, you know, if you extenuate it out, it's like, a scorched earth policy isn't good, and that's what we are instituting. When you look at the tar sands, the pictures of that in Alberta, and many people I talk to have never seen it. They don't know what that is.
Right.
They haven't looked at the map of North Dakota and see all those fracking wells, like, set up on a grid pad. And all and these train cars that are not prepared to carry that. It's like, this is a recipe for devastation.
Yeah. Okay. I got you, Sheila.
Right.
And
I, Sheila, I want to say
answer
that,
this. Hold
right.
on.
And I think one of the things we need to do is counter that with different pictures. I was at Mount St. Mary's University in Emmitsburg, Maryland, before coming out here to Kansas to take over at Donnelly College. And at Mount St. Mary's, we made a commitment to go green in a large part of our campus. So we took 117 acres that we had that were being used for some farming and some laying fallow. But we put solar panels, one of the largest solar farms east of the Mississippi. And so a good chunk of our campus was being powered by our own solar farms. And there was a lot of discussion when we did it if we should put them in a more remote area where they wouldn't be seen from the main campus or from the highway. And our president at the time, Dr. Thomas Powell, made a great decision to say, no, we want them to be seen because we want people to recognize this is what we all should be thinking about, is how do we create energy that is renewable? And this was a joint venture with Constellation Energy and the University of Maryland to provide green renewable energy to the system. So I think we have to counter those ugly symbols of ecological disregard with examples of regard.
Okay.
I have a couple of questions. One, so in tandem with the Pope's encyclical, he's also like put together some task force of some pretty heavyweight people, and the one name that caught my attention was Naomi Klein. And I thought maybe you could tell us a little bit about this task force and what...
Well, he's working with the Pontifical Academy of Scientists. You know, the people don't probably know this, but we have one of the most efficient and well-known in the scientific world academies that tries to come together from different nations and different parts of the world to address scientific questions. We have a astronomy commitment that is among the best outside of universities. And this panel has advised the Pope throughout the working of the drafting of this document. It's somewhat controversial because here in the United States, some people deny that man is significantly contributing to the global climate change that we obviously see. But in fact, in Europe and in most of the rest of the world, this is not a controversy at all. They know and they see it. They see their high altitude glaciers melting. They see their coral reefs dying. They see the loss of biodiversity. They see the destruction of their forests and the silting up of the deltas because of that. So, you know, this is one of the things that's it's controversy only over here. The rest of the world sort of gets it. But he's brought together. He's willing to work with people that disagree with us on other issues, because this is such an important issue. If we don't get this one right, we're all going to suffer, not only in the short term, but especially in the long run.
Okay. No one's online, right?
No.
Okay. This is something I want to bring up, and I think it's important because your second area that you hit was the poor and the earth. Now, and this is going to even Marco and you and Sheila and the ones that's called in, Sheila, like the things you're talking about, I agree with you 100%. And efforts need to be made to start bringing people out. I heard the advertisement for that protest yesterday. You get 25 people. Okay, this is what we've been experiencing, is that we want to get mad at the government. We want to get mad at these agencies that are doing all this stuff that's going on. Just like when we have a fund drive here, I say that this is Eco Radio. We should have our people calling in making donations and kind, because we're the only station in town that talks about it. You know, it's like you say you're preaching to the choir. Well, we need to preach to the choir. I think that's what the environmental minded people need to do. But the Pope wants us to focus in on the educating of the poor. Because that is where, I'm telling you right now, the one thing that Monsignor asked me and Mike when he came in, well, how are people reacting to it? I've been out of the country. I don't know, blah, 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 blah. And I told him, other than the choir, I don't hear anybody talking about what the Pope has done. We got to take a break. That's why I'm going on talking, because we won't be able to start answering this, but when we come back, you will. Other than the choir, I don't hear anybody talking about it. And because out there in the real world, they are totally clueless still. And he's saying, we need to focus on the poor. There's a relationship, a connection there. And so when you come back, I want you to address that, if you will. We're going to take a break here, people. Hang on.
Californo's Westport presents An Evening of Dancing and Jazz Organ in the Saloon on Mill Street, Wednesday, July 22nd. It's B3 Vibrations with Rich Hill and the Riffs. Wednesday, July 22nd, on the patio at Californo's in Westport. More info at californos.com.
On the next Bioneers.
We need to organize. We, the community of 900 families, raised enough stink, raised our voices, united together, stood together, and demanded that the government make right, and they came to Lau Canal.
Friday morning at 9:30.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Bob Inglis is a former U.S. congressman from South Carolina who once said, climate change is only in Al Gore's imagination. But then a comment from his son during a re-election campaign more than a decade ago made him rethink his position.
My son, he's voting for the first time in 04. He said, Dad, I'll vote for you, but you're going to clean up your act on the environment. That was step one of three-step metamorphosis for me.
Step two was seeing evidence of climate change with his own eyes during a trip to Antarctica.
Step three was being inspired by an Aussie climate scientist who shares my worldview, who told me about conservation changes he was making in his life in order to love God and love people. People will never know because they'll come long after us, and I found that very inspiring.
Today, Inglis believes that it's possible to use market-based solutions, a traditionally conservative approach to problem-solving, to address climate change. His idea begins with eliminating energy subsidies and placing a carbon tax on all types of fuels.
And if we do that, then the free enterprise system can deliver innovation faster than government mandates or regulations could ever imagine. And so it really is as simple as fixing that economic distortion and then watching the free enterprise system do its magic.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
All right, this is Richard Mabian, and I'm sitting here with the Monsignor from Donnelly College, who is sharing with us the Pope's intention with his encyclical that had to do with the climate concerns. And I'm gonna throw out the number again, just in case someone would still like to call. We got a little time. 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534. When we took the break, Monsignor, I was talking about the poor.
Right. Well, the Pope in paragraph 48 makes reference to a document the Bolivian bishops published that he quotes from. And, of course, he just was in Bolivia. And that document makes it clear that from their perspective, the poor always are the ones that are hit the hardest when environmental problems happen. You think of where I come from, Pennsylvania. We had some major floods that killed hundreds and sometimes thousands in the 20th century. Of course, it was always the poor that were affected by those floods because the rich built up the hill. Matter of fact, that's what it was meant. To be richer meant you moved up the hill in Johnstown, where my brother was born. And it was the poor that were affected by that tragic flood. And that's what the Bolivian bishops recognize, because they have their feet, they have the smell of the sheep. They're good shepherds. They know their flock.
That's twice you said this.
Yes, and it's like important that we recognize that and listen to those who are on the ground. Right. And that's true. Now, when you get wealthy, you can live in a better environment, and you spend the money to clean up the environment you live in. But often the poor, in desperation to live, have to they have to burn what they have to burn. If that means chopping down the trees like they did in Haiti, right, much to the long-term disadvantage of that island or that part of the island, then they will to survive. So this is why the Holy Father says there has to be some solidarity.
Okay.
The poor, the rich have to recognize that as we change our lifestyles, not just to punish us, but we do it to help others. And so, yes, we're going to get a little poorer, and our lifestyle is going to be a little less. But that would be better for us, physically, psychologically, spiritually, I would say, morally.
Right.
But in doing so, we don't just do it to harm ourselves. No, we do it to help others in solidarity. And so when we develop clean technology, we should be willing to give that away. Just like when we develop drugs, we should be willing to give that away to the poor, not charge exorbitant fees.
Okay, and now we're going to run out of time here. But I want you to promise you'll come back.
I'll be glad to.
There is so much we could talk about.
I love teaching about this and
talking
about this.
We can talk about this. I want to talk about the secular world now. Here we are. Well, what kinds of programs do you think, because we need to combine the two. I love that about the world being connected, and we got to connect this world. The kinds of activities we can have locally. What do you have on that?
Well, the old adage, and it's a good one, to think locally, think globally and act locally. One of the things we need to do, as you know, we're both from Wyandotte County. We know Wyandotte County is among the least healthiest counties in Kansas, for example. Right. We need to work on that. And we need to help ourselves by growing some of our own food and having local gardens. And not only is that ecologically healthy, but it's good to connect people to their food supply so they understand that. We know we need to eat more healthy foods in Wyandotte County. And we want to do so. So we want to look at some projects where we teach young people how to can, how to grow. And so we're going to turn some of our land at Donnelly into gardens. I know you're working, and we're going to be working with you. Our environmental group from Donnelly will be working with you, trying to have some of those local gardens as a teaching tool and also to provide some good food.
Well, you know, I like the fact we created that program with Hilton Garden Inn. I like the fact that they are willing to get involved with us in an adventure where they're ready to help finance it because they feel these things need to be done. So that's another area. I like to have that community, school institutions and businesses engaged in activities that our young people are seeing. To know that it's all of us. We're all connected and making this happen. I like that.
Yes, and this, of course, crosses denominations and crosses religion. This is a great opportunity, as we have, like with the Interfaith Power and Light, the great things they're doing to work together to preserve and conserve and be the good stewards we're called to be.
Well, I'm going to let you have that last word on that. I'm going to get off of here and let her naturally come back in to close up, but I really appreciate you coming. We spent some time together this week. That's unusual for you because you're a busy man. So I really appreciate you being here. And naturally, have it your way. I'll be back again, gang. I'll let you know what it's going to be. Thank you for listening, and thank you, the ones you called in. Thank you.
Thank you, Richard, and thank you, Monsignor. This is Natural E with your environmental news. The Sierra Club new member fair is tomorrow at 6:45 p.m., and all are invited to find out about the Sierra Club and learn how to get involved with programs, advocacy, and recreation in the Kansas City region. Dinner will be provided. The event will be held 6:45 p.m. on June 14th at Overland Park Lutheran Church, which is located at 7810 West 79th Street. Overland Park, Kansas. You can find more information by visiting kansas.sierraclub.org. And on Sunday, July 26th, in North Dakota, No Keystone XL Dakota will host a march across the bridge into Pierre to show the collective resistance to tar sands in the Keystone XL pipeline. The march will be followed by a water ceremony, concert, rally, and a community feed. On our Eco Radio Facebook page, find the invite to this event, and you can find out who else is riding up there from Kansas City, and you can find out how you can also get to North Dakota for this march as well.
Thank you very much, and now we're going to go out with, as we usually do, with This Week in Water, and do stay tuned for Sabor Latino coming up at 7 and Fiesta Musical at 9:30. Keep it right here to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Exxon misled the public about fossil fuels. That and other stories for the week ending July 12th, 2015.
I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin. And it's This Week in Water.
Since 1981, ExxonMobil knew that their operations were causing global warming. But instead of sharing their concerns, they misled the public and politicians.
In fact, the oil giant had been funding studies by climate change deniers. A new report from the Union of Concerned Scientists reveals the company's own internal documents and memos.
For example, an internal memo at Mobil in 1995 said, The scientific basis for the greenhouse effect and the potential impact of human emissions of greenhouse gases such as CO2 on climate is well established and cannot be denied.
Nevertheless, Exxon publicly refused to acknowledge climate change for 10 more years and continued to provide financial support for climate change denial.
According to research carried out by Greenpeace, Exxon spent over $30 million on think tanks and researchers who promoted climate change denial.
Some have likened the fossil fuel industry's conduct to that of tobacco companies that for decades resisted the evidence that smoking causes cancer.
Last Thursday, the California Council on Science and Technology and the Lawrence Berkeley National Lab released a report into the practice of hydraulic fracturing.
The report looked at all aspects of fracking in the Golden State and contains recommendations, some of which state that there must be much more study about the hazards from this controversial industry.
But while fracking is still allowed to continue, the report states that the risks associated with about two-thirds of the chemicals used in the process are not clear.
Furthermore, the toxicity of more than half of those chemicals remains uninvestigated, unmeasured, and unknown. And basic information about how these chemicals move through the environment doesn't exist.
The report also concludes that certain operations need to stop now. For example, some operators currently dispose of wastewater from fracked wells in percolation pits, and some have occasionally injected wastewater contaminated with fracking chemicals into protected groundwater.
The report also raises concern about using oil-filled water in agriculture. One of the authors told the LA Times that he was surprised to learn that recycled oiled wastewater was being used on crops. He questioned whether we can assure farmers and consumers that their food is healthy until the safety of this water is known.
Tens of thousands of people in Kosovo were without water on Saturday morning over fears the Islamic State, or ISIS, had poisoned a reservoir there.
The water supply company in the capital, Pristina, said it had turned off its treatment facility after police arrested three men behaving suspiciously near the Badovac Reservoir.
Al Jazeera is reporting that tests carried out by the Kosovo Institute for National Health had detected no sign of toxic content. The reservoir supplies drinking water to more than 200,000 people.
Kosovo had been on a heightened state of alert in recent weeks after propaganda videos surfaced showing Balkan members of the terror group warning of attacks, including the poisoning of water supplies.
Two firefighters were injured in Detroit last Wednesday. There were difficulties dousing the flames due to low water pressure.
According to Executive Fire Commissioner Edsel Jenkins, about an hour into their efforts, firefighters realized the pressure was an issue and called the Detroit Water and Sewerage Department to increase the flow. About 30 minutes later, crews were able to redirect more water to the scene.
Keona Jackson with the Water Department said the problem stems from old infrastructure. It's not unusual for the city to regulate water flow in certain neighborhoods, especially those with older pipes, to keep them from breaking.
The department officials acknowledged, however, that the city's aging water mains are a growing threat to public safety.
The need for improved infrastructure is tied to the very high-profile fight in Detroit over water rate increases. Unless the city council approves a hike, officials say the city won't have access to the millions it would take to install new mains and gates to keep the water flowing during a fire.
And finally this week, want to go fishing and don't have a boat? Not a problem if you were in Abilene, Texas.
On Tuesday, residents received almost 9 inches of rain, triggering flash flooding and, for some, great fishing.
People in one neighborhood grabbed nets to catch fish swimming down flooded local streets. These were no minnows. Some appeared to be 2 feet long.
The record-breaking rain added a year's worth of water to the city's supply and was the wettest day in Abilene's history. And catching fish with a net when a storm turns your front yard into a river? Whopper of a fish tale to tell the grandkids.
This Week in Water is a production of H2O Radio and is sponsored by Colorado WaterWise. Learn more at coloradowaterwise.org.
Thanks for listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Están escuchando KKFI 90.1 FM, Kansas City, Radio de la Comunidad. You're listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Latino soy. En mi alma que nunca se para,
porque él es mi luz.
Por tanto gozo que traigo conmigo, a veces pienso que Jesús era latino. Oh, y así es. Ninguna vida se aburre cuando oye este ritmo. Pues cuando suena el tumbao se aleja el maligno.
Se fue ahora mismo.
Si estás de acuerdo con lo que te digo, ve y dile al mundo que te